Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This week in PlayStation, we're talking about The Last of Us HBO Season 2, The Passing of Lance Reddick, and our Chia review. We'll have all this and more because this is PSI Love You XOXO. Usually, I'd start with the normal rigmarole, the thing we scripted out because we wanted to get the show going. But now I will say in your face, Ryan Povala Higgins, watching live on patreon.com/kindoffunny right now. There was a chat set off. What color would Greg's shirt be? Black? Somebody says green, which I would never wear. Could be blue. Sure. Nobody guessed the kind of funny shirt. The kind of funny, what do you got? Collared shirt? I guess.
Button-up collared shirt.
Kindoffunny.com/store.
No, you look big dapper.
Deal. Thank you very much. I feel dapper. Welcome to the show, everybody. That's Blessing. That's Janet. I'm Greg. And you can get this show on patreon.com/kindoffunny. Exactly where the wrong individual, Ryan Povala Higgins, is watching. There you can watch us record the show live, get it ad-free, and get dozens of monthly episodes of exclusive content. If you have no bucks to toss our way, support us in the Epic Game Store for free in Fortnite, Rocket League, or Fall Guys with the creator code KINDOFFUNNY. You can get PSI Love You XOXO for free. With ads and without any of the cool stuff I talked about on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe each and every Friday morning. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus Plus, Delaney Twining. Today we're brought to you by Honey, but let's start with a PSN message from you. Janet, you're wearing your chia flower. I'm jealous. I should have grabbed mine off the desk. Damn it, I didn't think about it. Oh, you're muted. Well, we don't hear you, Janet.
Mistakes made. All
there it is. We didn't hear you. Say it again.
Oh, I said, yeah, I should have reminded you because I remember seeing on, I think, Instagram, you doing unboxing or something.
Now, I don't mean to, you know, correct you, of course, unless something's happened and it's about to get very awkward. You're wearing it on the wrong ear, as we learned.
Looked it up on Google Images and I thought it is the right side. Is it not?
Right side's when you're not taken. Left side is when you're spoken for in a relationship. So unless you have something to tell me about. Oh, wait, hold on, though. You flip your camera, don't you?
Yeah. I think so.
Well, that would make more sense then, because it looks like it's on your right ear, but it's on your left ear. For I see. Okay, Janet.
Well,
I stand
actually,
down.
it is on my right ear.
Well, then you're
but
just
I'm
wrong.
I'm being her, and when the game, like, I'm being her from the game,
you're,
and for her, it's on
you're
the right.
Cosplaying.
Yes.
I can't wait to talk about Chia with you, Janet.
That's why it's there.
I can't wait to talk about Chia, because there's a lot to talk about that, but that's not where we're going to start with the PSN message from you. Remember, you can write in to be part of PSI Love You XOXO for free at kindoffunny.com/PSILY. Housekeeping for you, of course, before we jump into this. Ryan Povala Higgins knows it because he's sitting there in all his wrongness, but everybody else needs to know. We are recording this because of a crazy GDC/PAX East schedule on Tuesday. This is still going live on Friday as normal PSI Love You XOXO would. So if you're on Patreon, you're going to get days and days early. But I want to make sure people understand that if in the next few days, Jim Ryan's like, you know what? We're done. We're hanging it all up. That's why this episode wouldn't mention
you're
that.
You're in the lead.
We have a great episode without it, but I wanted to make
Don't
sure.
Don't quit while you're ahead.
Aiden from Edmonton writes in and says, hey, PS, I love you crew. As we unfortunately heard on Friday, Lance Reddick has passed away very suddenly. A moment of silence for Lance. As Lance played Silence, one of the most important characters in the Horizon series, my question for you is, what do you think will happen to the character moving forward? Will Silence be recast, or do you feel they may write this character out of the series? Will we see anything to do with Burning Shores DLC, given we are a month out from this point, or will we not know Silence's fate until the next full game? Of course, before we get into any of the stuff that doesn't matter, talking about video games, yes, you know, obviously, it's incredibly sad that Lance Reddick passed away at 60 years old, far too young, Friday in Los Angeles of natural causes, and of course, our thoughts go out to everyone affected by this, his family. But of course, the people who enjoyed his work, whether it be in something like John Wick, whether it be the Destiny community that continues to grieve and go and have so many amazing memorials to him inside of Destiny, or the PlayStation community with Horizon. I know, obviously, Silence is such a big character from Horizon 1 into Horizon Forbidden West. And then, yeah, what goes on from there? Blessing, if you were a betting man, what do you think will happen with Silence?
I don't know. First of all, yeah, rest in peace, Lance Reddick. That was one that hit me like a wave when I saw it on my phone. I was sitting in the office in like the kitchen area, and I was like an hour late to the news because me and Roger were getting out of a meeting, and I look at my phone, and legitimately, like, I fell back a little bit. Like, I was like, yeah. Oh shit, I recoiled because I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is news right now. And yeah, it's very shocking, very crazy. But then, yeah, in terms of what you do with Silence, I really don't know. I think there are multiple options, right? Like, you can have the character, you can either write off the character, right, in the next game. I think it being a video game gives the opportunity to just, like, have a different voice actor come in and, like, you know, finish that story. Because I imagine that with Horizon, whatever the next game is, I've always had the assumption that they're doing a trilogy situation.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a conversation we've had or, like, thought about.
We've talked a lot about that.
Yeah, I've always felt like...
Especially how the second one ends.
Yeah, with how the second one ends, I'm like, this next game feels like it probably should wrap up the story to some extent. And so I think with you being this far into the story and this far into this arc for the character, I think the only natural way to take it would be to still have that character live out the natural storyline that you've... Yeah, that you've... concocted for this character, right? And I think maybe you have a different voice actor come in and finish.
Wow,
I don't know what you do to likeness, right? I think likeness might be a weird thing to figure out. You could change the likeness. We've seen that before. I don't think that would be too much of a shock given the circumstances, especially because you're dealing with an audience that knows, an audience that understands the situation. So if you want to change the likeness to whoever the next actor, voice actor is for that thing, then I get it. But also, yeah, I think it's that thing where this is such a different, I think, a newer thing for video games, because video games are more of a younger thing than something like film, where is it weird to have it be a different voice actor, but then the same likeness because you are keeping the same character?
Sure.
I guess that's where things get a little bit iffy for me. But, you know, I would think that maybe the right way to go, or a fine way to go, would be to just have somebody else come in and finish that role.
Jan, I saw you nodding a lot while Blessing was talking. What's your take?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I suspect that even if the third game isn't the end, I could see it being the end of a lot of what we know as Horizon in terms of characters, goals. So I feel like naturally, if there is a Horizon, even if there is a Horizon 4, I could see a lot of these people not really playing a role in general, like of the whole cast, because I do feel like 3 will feel like a form of an end, at least to part of the conflicts that have arisen throughout 1 and 2. I do think the probably most likely thing, if I had to guess, is that they're just going to recast the voice actor, but maintain likeness. I do think there's also another wrench in this of how the contracts work and the legality of it all. I'm not sure if it's kind of already agreed upon for his role. And then what happens in this case, do they have that already planned out via the paperwork? Is that something that then goes through his estate? And then, you know, what do the people in his life that are in control of those type of decisions, those, like, you know, would that play a role in, like, what they do anyway? So it might be, there's two things that are kind of factoring in: what the team and, you know, the people involved in the estate want to have happen, and what's, like, possible to have happen, or what makes sense logistically. As far as Burning Shores, I could see him already being in there. I feel like Burning Shores is something that is probably mostly done. I think especially for those acting aspects, I imagine what they're working on in Burning Shores at this point, with it being, I think, what is it, like, a month away? Come out in April or May? Yeah, I forget the date offhand, if one of y'all could grab that as a reminder.
Sure.
But I imagine a lot of that work is kind of already solidified. So I think if he was in there, he was already in there. And if he wasn't in there, that was unrelated to this kind of thing.
April 19th. So for my answer to the question, right, I think it's going to go this way. In Burning Shores is done and locked. I think Silent is or isn't in that. I would imagine he has something in there, right? Him and Aloy are on the same page at the end. Spoilers, sorry, for Horizon Forbidden West. We're going to go into very top-level spoilers that clearly, you know, Silence is still a character in there. He's aligned with Aloy's in what's coming and what they have to do, right? I think Burning Shores will see if whatever they were going to do with that character be the same. I think you'll get a dedication to him, whether it be the very, very front now in the opening credits or at the very, very end of it in the closing credits. But for the trilogy going forward, I do not think they will recast the role. I don't think they will recast it, and I don't think they'll do a different VO for it. I think, honestly, what will happen is one of two things, and actually probably one of the same. I don't know Lance Reddick, and I don't know his family, so I don't want to talk out of turn here. What I have seen, of course, is the fact that Lance Reddick, and I knew this from being a casual observer, just a fan like everybody else, did love video games, did play a lot of Destiny. Since then, his family has talked about how much he loved, like, thank you, Destiny community, for reaching out and showing love. He loved you guys as much as you loved him. I think with that said, Guerrilla will look at Horizon and be like, listen, he was Silence. That's the end all be all of it. And so it'll either be that he, again, top level spoilers for everything that's going on in Horizon Forbidden West, right? But we know that the nemesis is coming, that they have a giant thing to come together and fight. I could see Silence being the first casualty of that, using VO you've either cut before, had in the can, et cetera, et cetera. And say, all right, cool, we're going to use that to do this. Or again, in a very similar way, not, and I was going to say making light of it, but it isn't making light of it. If you know that I cite Don Rickles, the comedian, as a joke a lot, because I like Don Rickles a lot. But when Don Rickles passed away, they still used him in Toy Story because his family said, please don't write him out. Please don't recast him. He loved this so much. And they cobbled together voiceover stuff to make him make sense that way. I could see them doing that with the third installment of Horizon as well, right? Where they cobble enough together to get him as a part of the story and then have Nemesis attack Silence and take him out or whatever the hell it is, or have enough VO to put him off on his own. I got to go and go do this thing over there. I'm going to go fight this kind of thing. I think that's how they would do it.
Yeah.
But I don't think he recast him.
I think it's just such a tough thing to balance, right? Because I think the question is, what is the most respectful way to go about it, right? And I look back at Black Panther Wakanda Forever, right? And how they approached it, right? Where it is, hey, you know, Chadwick Boseman is Black Panther. Like, he is T'Challa, right? We can't make another movie with somebody else playing that same role because it won't be the same. There is something integral to that actor that is connected to that character that, yeah, we got to find. We have to pass on the mantle of Black Panther, right? But it's hard to pass on the mantle of T'Challa in a way that makes sense for us, right? In a way that's honoring that character. So the way that they honor that character is to go, hey, let's start off, and spoilers for the beginning of Wakanda Forever, right? Let's start off, let's make about him, let's grieve, and then, like, let's move forward and make this a story that is centered around grieving in whatever, in Horizon, right? I think that's, it's a weird scenario since Silence is an important character, right? But is the story of Horizon isn't necessarily centered around that
he's
character.
He's not T'Challa to Horizon as T'Challa was to Black Panther.
Exactly, right? And I wonder if, you know, the conversation of if you do write T'Challa or Silence out of the story, how do you do that in a way that is respectful? And I don't know if having the whatchamacallit, the monster that's coming to eat the earth. If you have Nemesis come through. I was gonna say like the ball of information, which I think technically is what it is, but like if you have
Parallax from the Green Lantern movie.
Exactly. Yeah, if you have Nemesis come through and like have Silence be a casualty of that, is that a thing that feels respectful and feels honoring of the character? I don't know. Like I don't have the answers to those questions.
I think it would be more one of those where it's like character? Again, you would need the buy-in, and I obviously, no matter what happens, it would be at the family's discretion. But I think if they were down of like, oh, he loved being Silenced, he loved being video games, like you put him in there. I think Guerrilla and that family has to make that statement, and Guerrilla has to drive that point home in the run-up to it, because so many of us would feel that way. And then to your point, that I think the mainstream Horizon players who know that Lance Reddick passed but aren't looking at IGN for articles, back to what you said earlier, like, people get that, unfortunately, people pass away from movies and then you still use their stuff for this is their final performance, da, da, da. I think you could do it respectfully.
Yeah.
I think, too, so much of the question mark is what kind of story did they want to tell and how might this impact that story? That's such an unknown because we don't know what their angle was, you know, for all, especially with the way they ended, too. And the way Silence's character is just generally, again, like light spoilers for the franchise structure. He's such a, like, there and then not there.
Exactly.
Like he's a force and a presence throughout the games. Obviously, like, and is such like an iconic character in the way that he propels conflict and resolution all in one. Like what a he's so, you know, like messy, but also like behind the scenes pulling all the strings kind of thing in so many ways. But that being said, that also means that his screen time in general does look a little bit differently than what you'd expect from like the other main cast of characters that you like see in, you know, Aloy's army, as Blessing coined it as. So I'm just not sure also what they already had in mind and how this might impact that or what ways they'd like to impact it or incorporate it. So it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out, and also hopefully to the degree they can, I'd be curious about how this did have an impact on the story they end up telling or what they were going to do already, just from a creative standpoint.
Yeah, that's the tough thing is I think so much of it depends on what their plan already was, because I could see Silence being in the next game being a lot more present given where we finished the second game off of. And I think one of the things that makes it very difficult is the fact that Lance Reddick is so good. Like, Reddick as, I mean, in every role he plays, really like, he has that, like, that portrayal of, oh man, only Lance Reddick can play this character. Like, this is a character that I associate with his personality because his personality, his delivery, and all of his roles was so distinct. But yeah, as Silence, it's hard for me to imagine a different actor coming in and playing Silence because Lance Reddick is so that character. But at the same time, that character is so integral to the story and so good that it would hurt to see that character go away to some in some sense. So, like, I really, like, honestly, to this question, I really don't think there is a right answer. I think it is one of those things where, yeah, like, this happens and it fucking sucks. How can you respond to it in a way that is going to be most honoring? And, like, I would love to see something that is, all right, cool, like, if we do write this character, we do write Silence out of the story, how can we turn that into a, hey, we love Lance Reddick moment? How do we turn that into a, hey, like, this without this person, this story would not be what it is, right? This game would not be what it is. How do we treat Silence, who is, like, kind of a weird villain, anti-hero kind of character? How do we treat that character in that way? I think maybe that would be the way to go about it. But, yeah, I think there's multiple options, and I don't know how to balance the right one.
Yeah, it's a shitty situation for a gorilla to be in, obviously. Obviously, the shittiest of the situations is the passing of Lance. But, yeah, how you go in it, and I think it's one of those that'll be interesting because clearly they know the story they wanted to tell. Now they know, you know, the story they have to tell and how to figure that out. We'll have to wait and see, sadly. But
I do like the Burning Shores inclusion kind of suggestion / hope that you had, Greg, though. Like,
I'm for sure
looking for that. And I think it'd be really cool to just, like, toss into, like, some type of memorial area for Lance, like, within the game. And you kind of see that in, like, you know, nods within, I'm doing the Miles Morales Platinum now, and, like, oh, you go to, like, the statue downtown by, like, the pizza shop. Stanley, like, I'd like to see a little something like that. Obviously in the next game, having a similar thing as well, I think would be a nice moment, because
I feel like that's more,
not everyone's playing Burning Shores, right? But
that's also the thing of that's more reasonable, I think, where I think there's a lot, I wouldn't be surprised knowing Gorilla and, you know, how much Lance meant to them if they were trying to crank on it, but Burning Shores has to be approaching gold right now, so it's hard even to have a modeler drop something in out of the blue that is just reference to that thing. You have to wait and see what that would be. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see how they put that together. Before we go any further, ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you, of course, you could be watching us record this show live right now on patreon.com/kindoffunny. Over there, of course, you could get dozens of exclusive episodes. You could get exclusive merch. You could have a great time, and you could support this show, your PlayStation show. P.S. I love you, XOXO. But guess what, Jack? You're not supporting us. You're watching on YouTube. You're listening on a podcast service. So here's a word from our sponsor.
Shout out to Honey for sponsoring this episode. Honey is the easy way to save when shopping on your iPhone or computer. And thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. And we all know there's nothing better than the feeling of saving money. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. When you check out, the Honey button appears and all you have to do is click apply coupons. You wait a few seconds, you see the fun little dancing guy. Honey searches for coupons and it finds you the best ones. And then you just watch the prices drop. We here at Kind of Funny have been using Honey for years, and it's helped us save thousands on tech, costumes, food, you name it. Honestly, I just love how easy it is to just set and forget and save. That's the best part. Honey doesn't just work on desktops. It works on your phone too. You just activate it on Safari on your phone. You save on the go. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. You can get PayPal Honey for free at joinhoney.com/kindoffunny. That's joinhoney.com/kindoffunny.
Janet, Blessing, it's time for topic of the show. What are y'all giggles about? What are y'all giggles about?
Somebody in chat said Greg looks like he should be at a cookout handing out Bibles.
They're not wrong.
This is a shirt we sell. Your paycheck depends on this shirt.
I need to get one of those shirts. I do
it's
like
not
it.
Even,
I told
it's
you
not the shirt. Because if
it's the shirt just, combined with the glasses,
you know it
it's dad bod.
Combined,
it's dad bod.
Combined with the hair, combined with the personality.
The personality.
Like,
the
undershirt peeking out. Like, it's just everything
about
it.
You got me over
it.
Here, like, flipping the burgers. Yeah. Jenny, you want cheese on this burger?
Dude, you're nailing it right now.
Well, I'm a dad, man. And I grow up.
Yeah. Quote me a Bible verse, Greg.
Quote you a Bible verse?
Yeah.
And behold, he opened the seventh seal. And the sky became as black. This is a revelation.
Revelation. This is the end of the world. Yeah. Why do you only have Revelations memorized?
There's an easy answer for that, ladies and gentlemen. Gamer,
yeah. It's the darkest book.
Yeah, well, what was your answer, Janet?
Because he's a real gamer.
What was your answer, Barrett?
I have no answer.
It's the only Bible verse quoted in Ghostbusters. Thank you, wow. Jordan Vickers. Topic of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Chia is upon us as we record this. It is release day, March 21st. You could be playing on PlayStation Plus. It is one of those launches alongside of the service. Of course, it was developed by... Janet, do you know how to say this developer's name?
Awaseb. Awa, like water in Spanish, Awaseb.
Oh, Awaseb. Okay, great. The official description, of course, goes, a tropical open-world adventure. Climb, glide, swim, and sail your boat around a beautiful archipelago in this physics-driven sandbox. Use Chia's soul-jumping ability to take control of any animal or object and jam on your fully playable ukulele. A game inspired by New Caledonia. If you didn't know, New Caledonia is a French territory comprising dozens of islands in the South Pacific. Janet, you have beaten Chia. Yeah. You have reviewed it for Pen to Pixels. I'm screwed it up. Sorry. What's your kind of funny review scale out of five on this one?
My kind of funny review scale out of five is going to be a 3 out of 5, which is on our scale, okay. I gave it the same rating on my scale, which is good on my scale. So okay. That's a little confusing. But
No, it's fine. But I always say there's two okays where they're like, it's okay. You know, you might enjoy this, or it's okay. Blah, blah, blah.
It's the first one.
Okay, it's a high okay.
Though I feel like now we're getting it really into the weeds of like the sub.
This is why I love our scale being very general.
But again, just because I don't think it's quite great, it doesn't quite hit that high. Though I did consider it for a long time because I really love this game. But ultimately, I think my number one beef with it is I think they were so focused on making a fun frictionless experience that it ends up being it lacks a bit of intrigue, especially the more you play it and as you get towards the end. It wasn't until like 2/3 through that I kind of was like, man, I don't think it's quite great. You know, I don't think it quite hits there because everything I do is so repetitive, so simple to do, and not because it's like too easy or something. I'm not looking for this to be like a difficult game by any means. I'm not looking for that, but I'm looking for intrigue, things that make me think a little bit, and I feel like it's very much a game of going through the motions, and the motions are fun and charming. It is a cozy collect-a-thon of a game. If you like that setup, you're gonna have a good time with this. Like, I'm planning on platinuming this. I love this game, but again, from that critical standpoint, it doesn't quite reach that height of being a great game. And so I landed on a 3 out of 5 on both the kind of funny scale and my own personal one. But highly recommend, again, if you are PS Plus extra tier, it is available through that. And I think it's definitely a win for PlayStation in terms of having quality indie games day and date and having this associated with PlayStation. Super good for the brand, super good for players to get to check it out. That is my brief overview with Chia, but of course, there's plenty else to be said.
Blessing, did you play any Chia?
No, I did not. I did not touch Chia. I was waiting to hear what the Janet and Greg reviews were of Chia. But it's funny because Chia is one that I want to say debuted at maybe a State of Play. I remember reacting to a thing and like seeing Chia and being like, "Oh, this looks really neat." And one of the big reasons is it looks like it takes a lot of influence from games like Zelda.
Sure.
Right? Like you look in the meters while they're like, you know, the open land and then gliding across the land and the climbing and all that stuff. I'm like, oh man, this gives me Breath of the Wild vibes, right? And I don't want it to be the meme of like a guy who's only played Breath of the Wild compared to Breath of the Wild. But like, it
trust me, I have many things to compare this to when I start talking, so don't worry about
it. But then like in style too, it reminds me a little bit of Wind Waker, right? I feel like there's a lot of Zelda DNA going on in this game. And so it's been one I've been intrigued about and curious about. But around the time I got the code for this game, I also got the code for Resident Evil 4. And so I was like, well, I gotta choose one. But I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are. I gotta put me first.
So I have not rolled credits on Chia. And I think, you know, I have a whole narrative unto its own of what Chia is and where I'm at with Chia, right? And I don't think it comes as a shock to anybody who pays attention on social media how my year has been going, let alone my March, is that I'm not good. And the day this goes up on Friday, a Kind of Funny podcast is going to go up. That's me and Tim talking about this. But, like, I'm fucked up right now. And so that obviously is grief and a million other things going on and just, you know, a million other things we'll talk about on the podcast. But what I want to do is take that thread and talk about when I finished my last review, I was like, I need to play Chia. And I forget if it was Thursday or Friday of last week here in the office. Must have been Friday, actually. And I played a couple things on PlayStation VR, Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners, and then popped into, I'm like, I need to do Chia so I can do this. This looks like a Greg game. The problem was is that I wasn't feeling like Greg on that day. So I put it on and jumped into it, and it was like, it's beautiful. I love the art style. I love the music. I love all these things. And I was sitting there just fucking grumpy and depressed and like, you know, I don't want to do this. I just want to wrestle. I just want to go play 2K23. You know what I mean? I want to just do my faction shit. You know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I put an hour into it, and it was like pulling teeth for me where I was like, this is checking all the Greg boxes, but I'm not there. Like, I'm just not there for this game. I need to step away. And so I stepped away, and I was like, it doesn't matter. Janet's reviewing it, so I don't need to push it. I can just ask her questions and talk about it and find out when we get there. To then, throughout the weekend, I felt more and more of a pull to go back to Chia. Like, it started softly, and then I was like, damn, that actually, like, exploring that island is fun, and I do love the color. And the like, you know, when we talked about it, you know, ahead of time, not on the show, I don't think, just hanging out, shooting the shit, I was like, I don't know, like, the soul jumping into animals, I don't know, that doesn't sound enticing to me. But the way I use it in puzzles, like, damn, that's actually kind of inventive, and use it as a traversal mechanic, and I'm like, fuck. And so last night, I finally got to go back to it and sit down and play through it, and it was one of those things that it was like, that's, I was in the mood, I was in the mindset, and that hit for me. And so I think obviously Janet's review is the review, 3 out of 5 for the Kind of Funny scale. Especially since I'm early in it, right? I'm still first third, probably. I'm still definitely the first third of it. So it's like, I'm not even remotely where it would be. I can see what you're saying, Janet, because that on the angry Friday of playing it, I was just like, it's just fucking fetch quest. All it is fetch. You know what I mean? Go do this thing for this person so that they can give you the thing that you need to go do for the other person. It was like, even after a few hours of playing last night, I was like, that is still what this game is. But as much as the Zelda rings true, as much as a million other games people are going to want to and understandably throw at it, what it reminds me of, what resonates with me, and this is a reductive take, but it's, you know, an elevator take of it, right? It is a playable Moana, where it feels so much like that. What I found so enchanting and charming about Moana, I see in this game, where I love the character, I love the animation, I love the color palette, I love the music. That's been so surprising to me. I know that there's a ukulele in the game, sure, whatever, and in the trailer you see you playing a ukulele, but to get to these sections where it is like, all right, cool, you know, now you're going to play the Guitar Hero section of it, of, you know, to join into this, your own song, or somebody else's singing, or into this giant jamboree that's happening at the town festival kind of thing. I find it, okay, this is cool to play it, but then the ability to just hit L3 and have it autoplay and not feel like you're punished. The game is very much, I think, designed to remove the friction points where there are the press pause, right? And it's like, do you want to skip this gameplay segment, like, to get out of this thing altogether? Like, it's meant to be enjoyed, and that's why I think it's a step beyond watching Moana, but it's in that kind of same vibe, and that I know would turn certain people off. I love it because I'm not turning off the music game because I think it's hard. I'm turning it off because I think the song's fucking dope. They are singing in French, and I can't play the game and read the lyrics. And again, it's so beautiful. Like last night, I was doing this thing where, you know, for one of the little villages, I did the thing, and we're having this, and I'm just like, capture, capture, capture. Like, I thought all the shots looked so good and were so much fun and were so lively and so like, oh man, like I want to exist in this world. But so Janet's point that I can already see it, like, again, I call it fetch quest, you know, simulator or whatever. It is that idea of existing in that world is that lazy, slower paced tropical vacation. It is the lazy river, like, when you're on there, right? Like, the game is just meant to be like, it is the open world of Zelda, and it is climb anywhere, and it is a glider, but it's also like, just, hey, man, why don't you get that braided thing over there? You know, I keep turning you, the ukulele, very Zelda-like, can be used to change the time of day. And so when I'm like, you know what, I'm making my way across this entire island, let's turn it to night, because then I can see in the distance the things that, like, the pillars of light for what I should go collect and go do that way. Janet, am I going to end up hating this game, or is it, because you like the game, even though you think it gets repetitive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I don't think you're end up hating it by any means. I think especially too, and I hesitate to say this because I don't want to feed the, like, reviewer rush game versus true experience. I never beat the game. The true experience is never beating the game. It's also, if we want to go statistics wise, because most people don't finish games. But again, putting all that aside, I do think playing at your pace, chilling, enjoying it.
Yeah.
I only noticed like once I got to that final third where like the glass kind of shattered for me, where I'm like, and again, I'm doing a review, a formal review. I did a written review, a video review. Like I'm in the weeds on in depth on this thing. So I'm like, well, you know, I gotta be honest. Yeah, it doesn't quite do everything I hoped it would. I think for me, the number one beef I have with it is just that they invite so many moments of creativity, which is so fun, so great with the soul capture or soul jump mechanic, where you can go into a rock or a deer, and then you can be a dog digging in the sand. And they do so many cool things with that. But I think specifically in the main quest line, there's not a lot of use cases for doing those things in interesting ways, with two exceptions. One is early on, and it's you need an egg and you can become a chicken and then lay the egg. Yeah. I'm like, hell yeah, that's so cute, so smart. And there's another one later on. But other than like those two, there's not, and again, there might be other stuff maybe if you do like the treasure hunting. Like my friend and coworker at MinMax, at Game Informer, Kyle Hilliard, he did the review for Game Informer, and he like mentioned in his review that he really like loved like the treasure hunting, or just talking to him, he talked about that a lot. I didn't do any of the treasure hunting. The treasure hunting is optional. So I'm not saying there's not maybe moments off the beaten path that might invoke that, but I did a lot of side stuff and I did the main quest, and there wasn't just a lot of times where I felt like they got as much juice out of those mechanics as they could have. And that's kind of where I'm left wanting, where there isn't once you do one thing, you've kind of done it all. You know, I get a braid trinket. They're already marked on the map really easily. You go to the points of views to sort of do a shout, which kind of functions as a scan to add stuff to your map even further. So it's like everything's just on my map. So it is a lot of, okay, well, I need this thing. Let me go to where it's marked on the map. And then getting there, you can just like, let me turn to a bird and then just fly over there. So then there's not as much engagement with, I think, some of the systems they have. And for that reason, it does become like, I compare it in my review to, this is supposed to be an adventure game, but it's as much of an adventure as it is being at the grocery store with a really detailed list. Like, you're going and you're getting the thing. Now, that sounds really, like, negative, but the reason that I end up not minding that as a player in terms of, hey, I'm playing the game, am I having fun with the game, am I enjoying it, do I recommend it, the answer to all those things is yes, because I just like being in that sandboxy world. Yeah. I think they do the jump works really well. It's very fluid. Swinging from the trees when you like pull back the joystick and the tree can like fling you. The way that it isn't super harsh with the stamina meter, and you can easily upgrade the stamina meter. The stamina meter is also kind of your health. Like someone in the chat asked, is there fall damage? Like there can be if you fall really high, but that's all based on your stamina meter. So, and that auto regenerates, you know, as you're standing still or not jumping or whatever, or not climbing, I guess. So I just enjoy doing that. Like, I like checking boxes. This is a check the box kind of game. Like, 100%. I spent like an hour like getting pearls in the water, like grinding for pearls and resources to buy like a pink daisy like decal thing for my boat. And like, that was fun. I had fun doing that. I think it's well constructed and I enjoyed that process. But again, looking at it from the more, you know, game criticism lens, this does hit as that 3 out of 5 for me because it is lacking in a little bit more by the way of good mission design. Like, I think the world design, fire. The mechanics, fire. The way there's so much love infused into this game, which is not to say that every developer isn't, you know, pouring love and hard work and detail into their projects. But with Chia, I truly feel the results of that work. Like, straight up, I looked up flights to New Caledonia.
Dude, I was thinking like, the same thing last night playing. I'm like, I gotta go to New Caledonia. This place looks dope.
You can go there. I'll watch the Instagram story because it might take me a while to get there. Okay, I gotta see if maybe Isaiah can get us there. I can't get us there. Maybe Isaiah could. But and even looking at, like, if you look on, you know, YouTube, there is these, the developers did like a bunch of content for this game. And one of them is like these devlogs comparing New Caledonia and the islands there to the game. And straight up, like, I watched just the first video of that during my review, shot for shot with some of these. Wow. And it's funny because I've never been there. I wasn't really like super familiar with the terrain of New Caledonia until playing this game. But playing this game and enjoying the scenery and the flora and the fauna, it made me want to go and look, okay, let me see what New Caledonia is like in real life. And then seeing it be such a one-to-one, like, it just hits so hard. And there's something so beautiful. And I think there's power in that beauty they created with that. So again, even though I do think some spots are lacking.
Yeah.
I still really love this game, and it's why I'm, it's like, again, what Blessing always mentions with what I mentioned back in the day, the 3 out of 5 I love is like a 5 out of 5. Chia is that for me, where I'm enjoying getting all this stuff. Why do I like it? I like playing crane machines in games, and this one or claw machines. This one has a claw machine. You know, I'm getting trophies doing the slingshot thing, and then I'm using those trophies, and then that gives me a costume, and I can wear a cow hat on my head. And like, I like that stuff. That stuff excites me. It intrigues me. It gives me joy. And I think if you're that person, if this is resonating with you, you are absolutely going to love Chia. Yeah. And you might still have that conclusion that I have, Greg, of like, yeah, I can see why this isn't, you know, moving heaven and earth for people, but it'll still be a game that you'll probably really love. Like, if you love it now from the jump, you're still gonna love it. It's just that you might, like, for me, I found myself wishing that there was that little extra oomph to really put it over the edge into greatness. But again, a good game, still a good game, and I think Chia is very much like a good game and a great one to have on PlayStation Plus.
I think one of the interesting parts about it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is I had no hype coming in for Chia. Like, it was obviously an indie, and PlayStation was behind it, and that's fine, but the more we heard about it or looked at it, like the animal jumping thing, I'm like, oh, I'm not gonna like that. Oh, it's like puzzly, I'm not gonna like that. To get here and find that it's a, it reminds me so much of Alba, the photo game I played before and liked, and and Alba was in the same thing of like, oh, I spread that out over multiple weeks, I enjoyed what I did, but I had to be in the mood of, I want to go to this vacation island spot and run around and do stuff. And that's how I feel about this one, where I don't see Chia being like, I got to get home every night and play Chia till I platinum it or beat it. I see it being that I chip away at it over time, and it's just something I go and do because, yeah, it's easy enough to jump in and figure out where you were and what's going on with it. Everything you're saying, Janet, I think resonates with me for it. One of the questions I saw go through came from Snug Slacks, also known as Slug Snacks once in a while, who asked, how long did it take you to beat it?
It took me, according to PlayStation's very broken clock, 10 hours.
Okay.
The dev/PR side couched this as like a 10 to 15 hour experience, which I do think that's probably pretty accurate. I personally beat it in 3 pretty long sessions. Like, I played, you know, a good amount the first time. And obviously, I also did the preview, which did not carry over because I did the preview on PC Epic Game Store and the full review on PlayStation. But it also made it so that, like, I kind of, like, I had the combat super down, which there is combat in this game. That question I've seen come up just, like, throughout conversations I've had online with this game. It's very minimal and it's almost completely optional except for a quest at the end.
Is it just those paper people or? Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to butcher the pronunciation. I think it's, I want to say Mano. I might be missing that. It's M-A-A-N-O. And they're like, so there's a big bad Mayo.
Livonia or something like that.
Mainavora. I knew all this for the, if you watch my video review, I say everything correctly because I look at it right before. Here it a little bit less so because I'm just reading it. Again, the everything is in French / traditional languages of New Caledonia by default and by like, oh, that's the only way to hear it. That's the only way to hear the game. But the language for subtitles, obviously, it's your choice. And they have a number of languages to pick from. Me, of course, using English. But that's why I don't like know the pronunciation as well, because I have to look it up outside of the game. But they're like soldiers made of fabric and totems made by like the big bad that you're kind of, you know, the person that's the reason that your father gets taken in the beginning, which is this is like spoilers for the first one.
Well, I mean, that's the
game.
That's the whole basis of the game, right?
Exactly. Like
your father gets
PR
taken, you have to try to help him get back.
Exactly. So they have these encampments and they're throughout the island. It's optional for you to like go and do that. The way it's optional to do a lot of the stuff, like you don't have to like do the rock stacking minigame to get more soul melodies. You don't have to, you know, you need a few braided trinkets, but not even that many. It's very much a game that gives you a lot of things you can do, but allows you to like not necessarily do any of them. Like you don't have to do the shooting range minigame. You don't have to do the races. You don't have to, but I would argue that's some of the most fun stuff in the game. Like the fun of the game is enjoying the island and checking out all the activities. But to bring it back to the combat, basically, there's 2 ways to go about the combat. You can pick up like stuff like a lantern and throw it as Chia, like as the girl. Or the way that I do it is I soul jump into those objects. And then you can do a soul toss, which is basically when you throw the object and like you kind of bounce out of the object and the object gets
like
tossed.
Propel it,
Yeah, and all those things happen in slow motion, like you jumping into the creature or object, that's slow mode for you to get in there. You doing the toss, it's also slowed down, kind of similar to like, you know, Horizon, like Aloy's focus, how it slows down, you can kind of aim. I had some trouble with that in the preview, like getting used to the feeling. But once you get used to that capture and toss mechanic, I was like sick out there with this thing. I was a fucking god, and it's not a hard game or anything by any means, so it doesn't really mean a lot, but I was like, man, I'm fucking playing An-1 Shia. Like, I'm dropping in, I'm like jumping into something, I'm throwing a log, I'm bouncing back out, I'm inside a gasoline can. Like, I was destroying this army, and it was super fun. So I actually did end up really enjoying that combat aspect of it too.
So far for those fire guys, all I do is I possess a log in the fire and then just roll that around their encampment, setting them all on fire.
I never even thought to do that. And I do think those are times where, like, you see, like, pockets of what that next level that I didn't quite reach. Where having, I think, with this idea of just taking the Breath of the Wild part out of it, which is the easy, very easy comparison, but the fact that it's a physics-driven sandbox, the idea is, and I don't know if the etymology of how we use sandbox comes from this, but it's that idea of play and freedom. And hearing that from you is so cool. And I think what I wanted to see from this game that I think it kind of lacked is a little bit more opportunities for stories like that, more ways to get things done, a little bit more, and missions that are constructed in a way that offers a multitude of approaches. Now, I think your example with combat is a really cool one, because, yeah, I didn't do that. Every now and then I do see moments of, oh, you did it this way. Like, I didn't realize you could do that. Like, I didn't realize you could eat the food you picked up, and instead of just going to, like, they have food stands that can help, like, replenish one of your meters, like your soul meter. So there's a few pockets of that, but I do think that the missions don't fully take you there in the way that I wish they did.
An example would be, like, if you don't mind me cutting you off, where I am right now, where I was like, oh, that's neat, I hope there's more of that, is, like, you know, early on in the game, a woman wants a crab, so I went and got the crab, and it's like, I was like, oh, there's crab traps outside of it, so I'll possess the crab and then walk it into the trap and then pop out, and the crab trap itself wasn't actually interactable like that. I was like, oh, fine. So, like, I possessed the crab still, then I walk it up on the beach, then I popped out of it, and I had to run and chase it and grab it real quick. And then I started running with it, like, holding it above my head, like fucking Link with a bomb. And then finally I noticed the button prompt of, like, oh, store it. I was like, oh, I could do that way. Okay. It's like, and then I became a bird, and then I flew to the location to get it. It was like, that was pretty fun all around. I enjoyed that, trying to figure out what to do with these mechanics and how to make it go.
Yeah. I think, too, it's funny because, like, I talk about wanting a little bit more almost like pushback from the mission structure, but again, that's not to be conflated with inherent difficulty, because I do really like what they do with so much of the difficulty in terms of you can skip the rhythm games, which also the first two are really easy. After that, if you're on, like, a controller on PlayStation, those rhythm games are, like, kind of hard, but in a good way. Like, I had fun doing them. Like, they were really challenging to, like, swirl around, like, to hit the different chords and things quickly. But having the option to skip that, having the option to skip entire gameplay sections. They even have an option that's, I forgot what they call it, but it's basically, like, family-friendly mode. And it's, if you're, you know, playing with a child, or you're, like, setting up for, like, a child to play Chia, and you don't want them to see some of the more, like, dark content in the game, you can, like, toggle it, and that'll, like, change some stuff. So, like, a light example of that is there's this really funny scene where one of the things you need is, like, a dead chicken, and the girl, like, just takes a knife and just cuts the chicken's head off. And, like, the chicken's fine, it's kind of walking around not dead yet with little blood squirting out of it, like, kind of,
it's
looking
fine,
like
just a headless chicken with blood spurting out of its neck. I saw, like, this last night, I was like, damn.
Yeah, like, a Among Us style gore, but that is, you know, a lot if you're, you know, a young kid. And there's a few other scenes too. Like, this story goes to some shockingly dark places. Like, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a moment in this where I'm playing it, I see a scene, I immediately capture it, and I'm like, Isaiah, you have to look at what just happened, because it was so fucking crazy. Like, I was like, holy shit, this is, like, some dark shit that they put in here. And there's also a lot of moments of humor too that I was kind of surprised by. Like, there's a scene early on where, like, she has to fill out all this paperwork, and just the way it's, like, edited with, like, the sound design in there. So I think while my holistic, like, opinion of Chia is that it's a little bit lacking to hit that level of greatness, I do think there's so many pockets of it, and I think that's one reason why I am so hot on it. You see so many good, smart, fun decisions made that the sum of all those parts ends up being a really enjoyable experience, even though for me, again, it doesn't quite hit that 4 level. But I still really love it, and I'm excited for more people to play it. And I wish it scored higher, because I drafted it in my fantasy credit, but that's okay.
How do you guys feel like this fits into, I guess, the ethos of where PlayStation Indies are? Because over the last few years, right, as we've gotten into the new generation of PlayStation, you've seen them promote games like Chicory. We've seen them include games like Sifu and Kena and other Stray, and, like, other games that almost fit this indie to, like, triple I indie into, like, maybe even double A space that they've been pushing, that feels like they're trying to create this narrative of what a PlayStation indie looks like. Does Chia feel like it fits within that narrative that they've created, and is Chia something you'd like to see more from PlayStation Indies in particular?
Janet, I'll start since I'm the earliest and I know you'll have more to say. My first impression of it would be, yeah, it fits there. Because I feel like when you run through the indies you just talked about, and I include Chia, right, it has, you're talking about indies that have, I think, a bump in quality. Not that I'm insulting anybody, probably time, budget, stuff like that in terms of what you're doing. You're talking about a Stray or something. And then have something to say. I don't know if Chia's saying something in terms of its story because I'm not that deep into it, but definitely, like, this shocks no one, I'm sure, because I'm a complete moron. Like, I'd never heard of New Caledonia before this game, and it is all over this game. I mean, they make a point to keep saying it, put it almost as the tagline of the game, and remind you are there. And, like, it's definitely saying something about that place. It's definitely giving that kind of love and that kind of TLC to the gameplay and what the world is and the island, like Janet's talking about. Of like, I can sit there and be like, you know, I don't know how the story will pan out or how it'll feel in the end, but I definitely am of the mindset that they were like, let's pack this place full of cool shit to do and things to check off your list, like Janet's talking about. But like yesterday's play session, I got to one section where it was like, you know, I had to craft a totem. And it's like, this is the introduction to the mechanic, right? That'll become like, I use this to open up secret areas or whatever. But it was like, I got it and it was just a log. And then I had like the chisel and I was like, and it showed me what it wanted me to do. And I was like, what? And then I chipped away at one and I'm like, I guess I'm done. And then I looked at the thing, I'm like, oh no, like that, the one I'm supposed to make only has one whisker on this side. I have three here. So you chip away. Oh, and his eyes, and he's missing this tooth. And I was like, oh man, like I did it. And I was like, I fucking love this. I want to go find all those other ones because I like that mini game so much that I want to do that throughout. Like, I feel like that level of quality speaks to what PlayStation is trying to do with their indie lineup. But Janet, you can say better than I on the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that general take. And for me, I would say I'll kind of take a different angle. The number one reason I think this fits in great with the library of PlayStation indies is because it fills a gap that PlayStation is kind of lacking in. I think even in the AAA space to a degree, like, let me know if you can think of examples, because a lot of people like the style of physics-driven sandbox adventure game. You know, I'll just say it, Zelda-like. It is a Zelda-like game. It's just not puzzly, which, again, some people really fuck with, because I ain't going front. Like, I love Zelda, but, man, playing some of those games, like, I'm too fucking dumb to play this game. I don't know what the fuck. The puzzles get really freaking complex, and I do think Chicory is Zelda-like in its general construction as well, though it wouldn't be the number one game I immediately point to, I think, just because it's so centered around like adventure and like creativity more. Like, it's kind of a funkier thing, but that game's also kind of Zelda-like. So again, not saying there's literally none, but you know, please give the examples if you have them, because people look out for these games. But I think it helps check that box, because for me, there aren't a lot of those kind of experiences. Even if you look at something like, you know, Nintendo, which obviously has Zelda proper, but they also have a lot of clones as well, like available on that platform. And I think PlayStation is kind of lacking in that type of adventure, and also like, even not that everything needs to be this, but a family friendly type of adventure too. Like, there just aren't a lot of those experiences that I can think to point to. Again, toss out a couple examples if y'all can think of some, whether between you two or the chat. But that's another reason I think it really helps round out that collection, because it fills, especially like with the open world aspect of it being indie, it fills a spot that was lacking. And I think the number one thing that PlayStation should be and probably does have in mind when they're coming up with these, you know, deals and such, is making sure that you round out the experiences to the point where, sure, everyone's going to still associate PlayStation with AAA single player story. Like, I think that is PlayStation's bread and butter.
Of course.
But you want it to be a place where I want to be able to get everything from PlayStation. You know, my competitive, my indie, my open, you know, all these different aspects, and have it like deliver on everything. And I think Chia fills a gap that they do sort of have. But again, if people got examples, you know, toss them out.
Well, that's Chia. I'm excited to play more of it. Janet, thank you for your review. Everybody, of course, go to pen2pixels.com if you want to read Janet's entire review, where she goes into more detail and has more fun.
Chia.
Blessing.
Greg.
What's happening this week in PlayStation?
Neil Druckmann's out here teasing Last of Us Season 2. I'm going to read from Zarmina Khan at PlayStation Lifestyle. Naughty Dog co-president Neil Druckmann has tweeted a peculiar poster for HBO's The Last of Us Season 2, and it teases something fans will instantly recognize if they've played The Last of Us Part 2. This poster was originally shared for Outbreak Day back in 2017, but players will know exactly what Druckmann did here. Barrett has pulled up if you're watching the video version where Neil tweeted out, "No The Last of Us on HBO tonight." Of course, this is on Sunday. But Season 2 is already on its way. Endure and survive. And you see an image of what looks like It looks like Abby's arm. I gotta assume
definitely
it's
Abby's arm.
Yeah, hell yeah, it's Abby's arm.
Very, very buff arm. Abby's arm holding a hammer with the last list under it. And yeah. Like, I guess where I want to take this is...
I was going to say, I saw people freaking out, but I didn't get it. Where I was like, this is an old poster.
Yeah, that was
yeah, Abby's going to be in the part two, and she's going to beat the shit out of everybody.
I thought it was a fan poster. Yeah, like, yeah. When I saw Neil tweet this, I was like, Neil, you got to cite your sources. You can't just tweet fan stuff out of context. You got to link the original thing. But I guess, yeah, this is for back when they were first starting marketing for The Last of Us Part Two. I guess, the question I want to take this to is, like, what do you guys expect from Season 2? Do you guys think that it'll be a... one for one, like, let's match up the exact format we did for Last of Us Part 2. Spoilers for Last of Us Part 2 as we get into this, right? Like, is it going to be first half Ellie, second half Abby, or do you guys think they recontextualize it for TV?
They recontextualize it?
Yeah.
And they already said that they're going to... I wish I knew where they said this, but I believe they already said they're going to change some things in addition to, like, making it... like longer than just a singular season, and they already changed things for like the first one anyway to a degree.
That's the context where I believe it was either Craig or Neil talking about, like, yeah, we'll change things for season two or for Last of Us Part Two in the same way that in season one there were change ups for Last of Us Part One, right, to make it more appropriate for TV.
See, and when we did this conversation on the Last of Us recap show we did for Screencasts, the morning of the finale, the review of the finale, before we talked to Neil, I was very much like, no, I think they're going to have to intercut them. I don't think they want to do season two, Ellie's story, season three, Abby's story. I think that you turn people off, yada, 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 blah, 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 blah. And then when we talked to Neil, I was like, fuck, the way he was talking about it, I thought he made it sound in that spoiler cast with us very much like, well, no, we like Last of Us to Part Two how it was, and like, not that we're not going to make any changes. Clearly, there'll be changes, but I left that. And I was like, fuck, they're probably going to stick to the same thing. I think
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
know.
That was kind of the point of the original piece of art was to get you kind of on one side so hardcore, and then have you swing the other way. And so I think to try to go back and forth between season two, I think lessens that. In a way of what the story is trying to do for the people consuming it. So, I think they stick with one character for each season.
Yeah, I based on actually the same thing, right, the Neil Druckmann interview, I think that's the direction they might go, right, of sticking with that thing. I personally get scared of that, right? I think for the original game, it is such a, for me, that is such a video game story. Hey, yeah, let's...
Point A to point B.
It's point A to point B. It is, you're getting all that in one package, so you're not taking a year, two-year break between Ellie's story and Abby's part of the story, right, and letting that gestate. And then also, you know, I compared the game during our spoiler cast to, like, Shadow of the Colossus, in the way that, for me, Shadow of the Colossus works so well as a game because it is a video game, right, because they are putting you in those shoes, and you are going through killing this Colossus yourself, having that realization of, like, oh, shit, what have I done? What am I doing? And part of why Last of Us Part 2 hits so well for me is the fact that it is, oh, I am in Ellie's shoes. Like, I am literally in Ellie's shoes, seeing, like, I played Last of Us Part 1. I'm seeing what Abby did to this person I loved. I am now going out on this quest to, like, get revenge, doing all these things. And it is all me. And then having that switch to Abby and actually having to be in her shoes, I think tells that story so much better than what you could do in TV. Yeah. Like, Last of Us Part 1, the transition to a television show, At first I was a bit trepidatious. By the time we got to it, I was confident because they were saying all the right things, treated the right way, having Neil involved, having Troy and everybody involved. Season two is the one where I'm, season two and the future are the ones where I'm like, oh man, all right, let's see. Because I for me, that works so well as a video game. I don't know if I'm gonna receive it as well as a TV version if they leave it as is. And I don't know, like, if the response is going to be that much better, which it doesn't have to be, obviously. Like, even Neil said, like, we don't care. Like, response is, right? It is what it is. We want to get a reaction out of people because that's what art does. That said, I feel like the format of the art worked so well as a video game, and I don't know if that same format would do it as a TV show. I think I would prefer to see it, like, intercut in some ways, or at least bleeding through in some ways, right? Teasing the Abby switch up. Janet, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I'd like to see maybe some degree of it being intercut, because I think even as a game, like, there's three endings to the game. Not literally. It just feels like, oh, we're done here. Oh, no, obviously there's more of the game left. Now we're Abby. And then it's like, we're done here. And they're like, no, there's still more of the game left. And then I'm like, okay, now we're done. And then they're like, yeah, we're done. But also, like, here's a cutscene at the end. And it's like, and it does end up being a lot to take in. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't know. I'm not a TVologist, you know? I'm not a script writer. I feel like they did a pretty good job with season one. I do think, and I mentioned this, I think, last week, so I don't want to be too repetitive. But with season one, I was, like, watching it, and I'm like, wow, man, this is a better place for this story. This story is hitting harder than it did in the game. And then I got, like, halfway through, and I'm like, actually, the game might be the best place for this story, which is where the story started. Who knew? And I also think, too, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be better or worse. I think it just needs to be good at what it is, which is, like, in this case, a TV show, you know, because there are people that are going to be watching it that haven't played the game at all. Yeah, I don't know. I think some changes would need to be made in terms of that narrative structure, because I think even in the game, aspects of that narrative structure, once you're done with, like, done sort of with the second time, like, I think the way that game wraps up in terms of narrative construction feels a little bit whiplashy. So I think something would have to be done to make it not quite feel that way. And then I think there's also the struggle of, like, which I know it's, you know, debatable. Y'all had this conversation around, I forgot which show it was, maybe it was Mandalorian, of talking about filler versus not filler, and what is filler? Does filler really even exist in
Carboni puts it.
Yes, exactly.
A television show.
But at the same time, watching with my family, like, I know everyone's like, oh my God, the DLC, the Left Behind DLC, and now seeing on screen. I'm not trying to downplay that. My family didn't give a fuck about that. They're like, what was this for filler episode? Like, because they didn't know those people. They didn't really care like that. You know, yeah. It's a different thing. And not that my family's the end all be all of TV criticism, but I wondered how many people had that reaction as well. Because again, we got this as DLC after the fact of having played the game. So it's like a whole different thing. So yeah, very curious to see what they do with it.
This is something I was talking about when I originally was like, I think they have to shake it up. I think they have to try to tell them, not concurrently all the way, right? We still need it to be that Joel and Tommy meet Abby in the group and we don't know who they are. Because you can only, that's such a fucking awesome episode of television and like catch so many people by surprise to have it be, you meet this other group of, you know, survivors. There's this blizzard. You finally get in the house. Why are y'all looking at us? You act like you know us, right? And it's going to be fucking insane. I can't wait for that moment.
Yeah.
And even then, I think it might be that, you know, why y'all looking at you act like you know us? That's because we do. And Abby, shoots Joel right there, right? I feel like that's a cut. And that's credits for the episode, the week, right? And then I could see the next week's episode being the introduction of Abby's story, right?
Yeah.
Her and her dad saving the zebra, then all the stuff. Then we, oh, fuck, like, that's why she shot him. Oh, my God. Yeah. And then we meet back up with
him. And that's my thing. That's, like, those are the kind of switch-ups that I would like to see. Right? Yeah. That I think could be additive for a TV format. Because, like, the difference between TV and video games is, like, for video games, at least for The Last of Us Part 2, you are locked to that character, right? Like, they could have done it in a way where it's like, oh yeah, like every other chapter you're switching between the characters, but the way they decided to do it for the video game is, hey, you are playing as Ellie, that way you are, you know, progressing as Ellie, upgrading as Ellie, getting side of the story, and then boom, second half, you are playing as Abby, upgrading as Abby, getting that side of the story, all that stuff. Last of Us, the TV show, especially when you look at season one, it is, hey, it's episodes, right? It is these standalone stories. It is, here's Sam and Henry's episode. Here's Bill and Frank's episode. Here's the Left Behind episode. Here's Joel and his daughter's episode, right? Like, it is so like, hey, we are telling all these individual stories within the season to then, you know, build up the whole thing. Last of Us Part 2, I don't know if Last of Us Part 2 lends itself as much to the format the way it is, but I think it can if you do rearrange things in a certain way to make it more sense. And for a TV show, I think it is more natural to go, all right, now here's the episode about Abby and her partner. All right, now here's the episode about Ellie and Dina and when they get to Seattle and the horse blows up. Like, I think you can find ways to work around it. No.
I've known you for so long.
But yeah, I'm excited to see. And I think the other thing too is in the way that the video games are, we have Last of Us Part 1 and Last of Us Part 2, right? And Last of Us Part 2, we still look at as Ellie's story. It's Ellie and Abby's story, right? But like for TV, because it is seasonal, and I know they're probably not calling it, well, they aren't calling it Part 1, Part 2 for the TV show. But in the way that we assume it's going to be Season 2 being Ellie's story, Season 3 possibly just being Abby's half of the story, that is a interesting and maybe weird way to format a, like, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. Like, by the time we're getting to Part 3, it's like, oh, okay, this is now an entirely different story. Like, I don't know if that hits the same way on a TV show versus the way that it is packaged as one thing in the video game, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But we shall see.
We shall see.
Next up, we got some breaking news for you for PS Love You XOX.
For us live.
For us live, yeah.
You on Friday will probably know more than we do about this.
This will be old news by the time, yeah, you're listening to this. But breaking, Spider-Man 2 could come in September. I'm reading from Grant Taylor Hill at Insider Gaming. Tony Todd, Venom's voice actor, has dropped a telling message on Twitter that apparently confirms Spider-Man 2 will be launching in September, with an aggressive publicity campaign kicking off in August. In the post on Twitter, Todd, who has apparently flouted any NDA that may have been in place, responded to a comment stating that he'd been told commercials will start dropping in August to advertise the release of Spider-Man 2, which will now reportedly launch in September. Todd posted an image on Twitter showing himself in a motion capture frame, to which a user stated, "Can't come quick enough, Spider-Man 2. Now, we're not sure why, but Tony Todd responded with full unrestricted transparency, clearly stating the following. Quote, "Looks like September." That's a really funny reply. "Looks like September. Massive publicity coming in August. Commercials start dropping in August, so I'm told. Hold on to your ... and hold your breath. Gonna be necessary." And that's the tweet.
That's the tweet.
That's really
funny.
And
it's blowing up right now live as we are podcasting. And so people are responding. Somebody responds, "Yo, Tony, is this for real, man? Because I'm losing it." And Tony Todd just goes, "Oops." And then he retweeted the oops. He retweeted his own oops. So you can see it's not just a response. Tony Todd's like, "Fuck Insomniac. I don't give a shit what their plan was."
That's so funny. I mean, cool.
He also retweeted somebody who said the NDA and went, "Shh." He retweeted that.
Does he not know how NDAs work?
I don't know, man.
That is so funny. All right.
He retweeted, "Surely we'll see gameplay in the May/June with the rumored showcase."
Oh my God.
Do you think he's just like, by the way, Barry, you can pull away the spoilers, bro, thing. Unless these are spoilers for Spider-Man's release date.
Venom's in it.
Venom's in it, spoilers. Do you think he like just listens to KFGD and he's like, "Oh yeah, they talk about it probably being September." So
I think it's a normal thing where I think so many voice actors just don't, like, it's just okay. Yeah, somebody's saying, "Oh man, I can't wait." You don't have to wait long. He thinks he's probably doing the right thing of like promoting the game or whatever, right?
But also, just looking at his filmography, he doesn't do a lot of VO work.
Yeah,
is the thing. Like, he's primarily like an actor, like television and film and stuff, yeah, like that. So
that's usually the when you see the mistakes. I remember, yeah, a TV actor who back in the day came over to do video games and for around PlayStation All Stars. He responded to some fan being like, "It's so awesome that X, Y, and Z are all in this game." And he's like, "It's an honor to work alongside them." And I DM'd him like, "Dude, none of that's announced." He's like, "Oh shit, I'm sorry." And it turned out to actually be a rumor. He didn't know. They were like saying, like, they were like, you know, oh, like they were going off the IMDb page that had characters on it that weren't actually in the game. And like,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, same way that Norman Reedus basically leaked Death Stranding 2, right? Like, that was the thing that he talked about in an interview. And it's like, yeah, Hollywood and TV and movies are way more transparent when it comes to projects being greenlit than video games, which are very secretive. And so, yeah, usually it's like I can talk about this thing.
It's more funny that Tony Todd's just like, "Well, I said it, so now I'm just going to fucking double down and retweet everything."
I just love how unprompted it was, too, because, like, was the tweet really like, "Oh, yeah, Spider-Man 2 can't come quick enough," and his reply is like, "September, like, it's happening this September."
Yeah, that's all it is.
That's can't so come quick funny. Enough. Now, let's see. To cause some drama, when did Starfield come out again? That had a date.
September something or other.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, someone in the chat said Spider-Man versus Starfield.
Yo, that's spicy. I love some. Yeah, it's Starfield is September 6, 2023. Oh, I love that. I love that. Real spicy.
Spider-Man by a mile.
I mean, yeah, I'm going to play both.
I'm going to play both. Yeah, but I'm saying you're making
very different kinds of games. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And like,
Spider-Man critically be very different in score. We'll have to see.
But like, I only care for the fantasy critic. I forget who has what.
Who has Paris has Starfield, probably, right?
Paris? Yeah, probably.
I'm checking.
The Paris Kiss of
Death,
man.
That seems like an X cast thing to do.
If I was Starfield, I'd be really nervous that Paris drafted me in my game.
Remember when fucking Mike was like, "Game, it's got to be game of the generation." That's the amount of pressure he's put on Starfield's shoulders. Todd Howard's like, "Come on,
every
man!"
Every single Xbox release, all right, Greg?
Oh, Gary Whitta has Starfield. Gary Whitta has Starfield.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's definitely Paris and Mike picking for Gary Whitta and being like, "We'll give him all the risky ones. Give him Armored Core. You don't know. Give him Redfall."
I mean, Gary's doing all right. What does he have? 14? Is it 14 total right now? Right?
Yeah, it's 14 off Hogwarts.
Only one of his games came out so far.
This one, I mean, you know, you're talking about like Starfield versus Spider-Man 2. I'll tell you right now, I'm knocking out Spider-Man 2 so fast.
Yeah.
I'm going to platinum the shit out of that game in like 4 days.
Just like you platinum Miles Morales.
Spider-Man 2.
Like, because I had 2 playthroughs. I didn't get, I'm going to platinum it one day. I'm going to do a stream. I got like, 3 hours left of gameplay to platinum that game.
Sure.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it before Spider-Man 2.
At this point, there's a great chance I'm going to platinum Miles Morales on PS4 before you get the PS5.
No, I'm going to platinum it. And then I'm going to platinum Spider-Man 2. I'm going to do it in 4 days. And I'm going to spend like 2 to 3 weeks
we could do
nonstop
Bless,
playing Starfield.
I know you probably don't want to. I think you already rejected this idea. But we could do, it doesn't have to be a full playthrough, mm-hmm. but like Miles platinum talk before that. Well, I don't know what we'd name it. But you know, because like, I'm also going after the platinum right now. I don't know if
I've been thinking
we can
about
just all do that together.
I've been thinking about making this a streaming thing. I don't know if I should let Kind of Funny get the rights to this or just do it on my personal Twitch
channel.
Well,
as the fact that you're talking about right now becomes Kind of Funny proper.
I don't know, man.
I apologize.
Chat be cool. Nobody needs to hear this, all right? Don't let Greg Miller know I said this. But like, I've been thinking about doing a thing called like Blessings Platinum Run. Because there are so many games where I've started my...
come and clean up a bunch, yeah.
Yeah, I get close enough, and then I just get swept to something else. So, like, Miles Morales is one of those ones where I've done the second playthrough of Miles Morales, and I just have cleanup to do, so I can finish that off. I have the Operation... No, not Operation. Fuck. I always forget the name of this game. The Aegis Rim. 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim.
Yeah.
I got so close to the platinum for that one, and I just need to clean that up. And like, there's a handful of games where I'm so close to the platinum, and I just need to get them. So I've been considering doing a streaming series where I do that.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be a fun one.
Mike, he'll get you booked.
I don't know. I could just do it on my personal channel.
Yeah, could you though? Because you just talked about it here. So now it's all right.
Twitch.tv/AndyCortez.
In lieu of doing a series of that, yeah, because I had the same idea because it's, I think it'd be super fun. Like, you should definitely do that. I just do it for when I hit my sub goal, my daily sub goal, I just work on whatever the next platinum is. Right now, my one is Miles Morales, which I'm finally, now that I'm doing the New Game Plus, which is funny because I'm like, man, fuck the New Game Plus. Dumb trophy. I hate this, and I stand by that, but I will say I really needed the New Game Plus because I fucking forgot everything about how to play that game. I was fucking just cranking out the worst gameplay I've ever made in front of a live audience. Oh, so, like, yeah. I just don't remember the button inputs for any of the things. So, like, going back, it's kind of nice because now I can relearn, like, all this stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's how I use my electric ability because I, like, literally forgot how to do that. But, yeah, it's been fun.
Hell yeah. Ryan Pavala Higgins and Jess says, Greg's platinum run sounds like a good idea.
I mean, it rolls off the tongue.
You can't just take my idea.
It rolls
just
off
give
the
it
tongue.
To Greg. I feel like I'm pretty sure that's the definition really of appropriation.
Okay, every Wednesday on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames,
YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames. Greg plays for his platinums. You don't want to see that.
Yeah. And you guys watched Greg try to platinum Metal Gear Solid 5 for like 8 hours and he wasn't able to complete it. You think he's gonna do more on stream? He's gonna disappoint you more on stream.
For the record, I have been kicking around what I want to do for my birthday this year. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, you know, for Greg's 40th, getting 40 platinums on a stream. And so they would all be like the awful.
They'd all suck though, right?
Yeah, well, a majority of them were. There's a few games that I do have like an hour left in them or
whatever. When's your birthday? How much time do you have left to prepare for that?
I got a month.
Okay, it's not a lot of time. Because you could try to queue up some of them if you have some on the
it would be 39 garbage ones and then one that I actually have to like do whatever for. No, even Metal Gear Solid 5. I got to S-rank all these missions. I don't know. Yeah, that was the one where you got to be sniping all the like zombies as they come at you. I was like, this is not fun. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, there's zombies in that game.
You know what I mean? Like, they're like, it doesn't matter.
Oh, and Survive?
No, yeah, not Survive.
I'm pretty sure you're thinking of Survive.
I'm not thinking of Survive.
That's the zombie.
Move on!
PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium games have been, for March, have been revealed. This is from Mario 64. For PS Plus Extra, you're getting Chia.
Chia.
Ghostwire Tokyo, Uncharted Legacy of Thieves, Immortals Fenyx Rising, Rainbow Six Extraction, Life is Strange True Colors /Life is Strange nice. 2, Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, Street Fighter V Collector's Edition, Untitled Goose Game, Final Fantasy Type-0 HD, Rage 2, Neo, The World Ends With You, and Haven. And then for PS Plus Premium, you're getting Ridge Racer Type 4 for PS1, Ape Escape 2 for PS1, and then Siphon Filter, Dark Mirror for PS1.
That premium lineup's brutal, man.
Well, you got what's the classics. Ridge Racer Type 4?
Those are the classics right there.
You're not a big fan of Siphon Filter, Dark Mirror?
Is it better than regular Siphon Filter?
I don't know.
And is Ape Escape 2 where they finally learn how to
escape?
Make a game.
wait, is that Ape Escape 1 slander?
Yeah. Oh, did you like Ape Escape 1? Because, like,
I played it.
I mean, maybe for the vibes, but not for the it being good.
I played it for the first time finally when they put out PlayStation Premium.
Me too.
And me and Barrett were playing it like on stream or whatever, and I was pleasantly surprised. I was having a good time playing Ape Escape.
You're like, you know what? Isn't again, terrible.
Good vibes. Yeah. Good vibes.
I was like, you know what? This aim lock stick technology has a future. Good
outrageous.
For them.
Outrageous.
Now it's time for PlayStation Picks. This is where we talk about the games that are coming out this week and the games each of us picked to play on PlayStation. The drop looks like this. Chia for PS5 and PS4, which again is on PlayStation Plus Extra. Atelier Ryza 3, Alchemist of the End, and The Secret Key for PS5 and PS4. And then Resident Evil 4 Remake for PS5 and PS4. And I guess I can start there in terms of what I picked to play on PlayStation this week, because I got to do the Resident Evil 4 review.
What'd you give it?
I gave it a 4 out of 5.
Wow.
I very much enjoyed
the Chia Killer.
The Chia Killer is what they call Resident Evil 4. No, I had such a good time with this game. For me, it's another, I guess, entry in the enjoyment that I've been having with the new Resident Evil games as they've been coming out, starting with Resident Evil 2, and then also going back, because I did go back and play Resident Evil 7 for the stream and really enjoyed that as well. But I feel like Capcom has hit such a role with Resident Evil, and they have such a good idea of what modern Resident Evil needs to be.
Sure.
Which is funny, because part of modern Resident Evil is going back to old Resident Evil and remaking and remastering them. Mm-hmm. For RE4, I have a similar story as Greg when it comes to RE4, because I remember you talking about, like, yeah, RE4 just never hit for you, right? And, like, I've had a similar thing where, as a kid, I had friends that would have RE4. I'll watch them play. I'll try it. And, like, for whatever reason, they just wouldn't hit for me. And over the years, I'll try to go back. I remember going back on the Wii, trying it, and being like, all right, I feel like it controls a little bit better with the motion controls, but I couldn't stick with it. Went back on PS4. By that time, it felt a little bit dated, and I've been wanting a remake to go back to for RE4. And so now that it's finally here, I feel like I've finally gotten to experience it in a way where I'm like, oh man, this is exactly what I've asked for, right? Like, it feels modernized. Moving while aiming for me is such a big thing that, you know, makes it way easier. The weapon switching, all the stuff feels so good. And then also, just the visuals of it look fantastic,
yeah,
right? It is a Resident Evil game on PlayStation 5. That is, like, you know, a remade Resident Evil game. I know RE8 was PS5 as well, but yeah, it looks fantastic. The one thing, like, the one thing that I feel like separates my review a little bit from a lot of the other reviews, which are, like, fans coming in, reviewing RE4, right, and getting to review it as a remake of a game that a lot of people have loved, yeah, right? And they got to see the innovation from RE4, right, where it is, you know, the camera angle was innovative for, like, being this, like, close to the shoulder, right? What you see evolve into games like Dead Space, Last of Us, etc. Seeing how dynamic the gameplay was, right? There are so many things that RE4 did at the time that were so innovative. It's very interesting looking at my experience coming into it, where I'm like, I'm not really getting that stuff, right? Because that stuff has happened. And so getting RE4 for what it is in this modernized form, which is a very great game, right? A game that I had such a fantastic time with. I look at the puzzle design, I'm like, man, this is so good. I look at the world and, like, the visuals, and I'm like, god damn, this looks so good. I look at the gameplay and the gunplay, and I'm like, man, this is such a fun time. I really had such a fun time with it. But also at the same time, I'm like, man, I could see this being a 5 out of 5 if I had the RE4, the original RE4 experience, right?
Sure.
The original RE4 nostalgia, which has been very fun to, like, I don't know, see both sides of that as, like, I've been coming in as a newcomer and seeing people that were fans come in as, like, people that are like, oh yeah, let's play this thing again and have that same experience.
As a fellow newcomer, sorry if you talked about this in the review, because I didn't watch the podcast. I know. I'm a fake fan. okay, but where does this land, or what's your ranking of them, of modern/old Resident Evil? Because I have the same experience. Minus the one caveat I'll give is I played, like, 30 minutes of RE4 on my Switch, and I played RE1 remake, remaster, whatever, on GameCube a little bit, but I didn't really keep playing because I didn't like it was scary too. So I really am just modern, but I didn't want to throw out those little caveats of a light history that I had.
So the Resident Evils that I've played have been Resident Evil 2 Remake, Resident Evil 7, Resident Evil Village, Resident Evil 3 Remake, and then Resident Evil 4 Remake. Resident Evil 2 Remake is still my number one. I think Mr. X is such, like, a good force in that game, and, like, turned that into something else, like, something so special. And I think because that game is a bit more concise in time, like, that game took me 8 hours to beat, 8-9 hours. And then, like, of course, you have the different playthroughs you can do. And then RE4 took me over 20 hours. It took me 18 and a half hours to beat. And there's a lot more content for you to explore if you're doing all the side quests and everything in there. Brittany Brombacher, who was on the review as well, put in over 30 hours. And I've seen a lot more people talk about, you know, their variance in terms of hours. But, like, it's a lot more jam-packed game in terms of content, but I like how concise is concise RE2 is compared to RE4, and then also RE2 feels a bit more honed in terms of the moment-to-moment survival horror aspect of, you know, the first time you encounter a Licker, again, like Mr. X being there. I like the setting of the police station. Like, I like so much of the atmosphere of RE2 as horror atmosphere, whereas RE4 feels like it's half survival horror, but then half action-y type game with, like, a lot of wacky, almost anime-inspired cutscenes where, like, Leon's doing flips and, like, there are fight scenes that remind me a bit of Metal Gear in a way. I think I prefer RE2 a bit more. And then, like, the story of RE4 is good, but it didn't strike me as, like, a I'm gonna remember these characters forever type thing. So RE2 I have is probably my number one. And then RE4, I would say, is probably right behind there at number two.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Yeah, and then I would say 7... Village RE3 remake.
Where would you put that?
That
medium?
Sounds right.
Where would you put medium? The medium?
I sadly have not played
the
medium.
Ah, you hate yeah. to see it.
The medium? Oh.
Yeah, sadly okay. I've not played the medium. But
fair enough, fair enough.
Yeah, I'm excited for people who are. I'm the excited medium. For everybody to play RE4 remake. I think this is a game where if you like these types of games, then for sure play RE4 remake. But I'm excited for fans because I think fans are going to be like, yo, this is fucking incredible. I think it's going to be a thing that hits them way harder. And the way that I play Shadow Colossus remake and I'm like fucking fanboying.
Yeah.
I think this is a very good example of how to remake a game to hit in a modern day. So. Yeah, really enjoyed Resident Evil 4. Kind of funny, 4 out of 5 on our scale. I'm sure Tim's going to play and give it a 5 out of 5. Like, sure. It's one of those ones.
Clown. You know, can't exactly. trust his review. You know yeah. what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Did Brittany give it a 5 out of 5?
She didn't give it a score on our thing. I got the vibes that I feel like she would have given it a 5 out of 5.
Sure.
You know, I did not ask her, but she was very glowing on it. She really enjoyed it. No, she said it was her favorite. I think she said it was one of her favorite Resident Evils.
Okay.
Sure. And so, yeah. Janet, what'd you pick to play on PlayStation?
I'm back before they had a chance to miss me. I played the Dark Pictures Switchback VR.
Yeah.
This came out last week on like a Wednesday or a Thursday or something. I think it was in our drop discussions like last week.
Yeah.
And I streamed it also. I figured out how to stream while hearing chat. It was a whole thing. Also, learning how to fight VR forehead during all this too. Bandana does work, but you have the bandana lines then. So I think the gotcha. Headband is going to be the VR forehead killer, but I got to buy a headband because I don't own one, like a sweatband. Anyway, none of that is the game. So the Dark Pictures Switchback VR is Supermassive's VR game. People have asked, is it a sequel to, what's the name of the one they had on PSVR 1?
Until Dawn, Rush of Blood.
Yeah, it is not a sequel to Rush of Blood. You can argue it's a spiritual successor in the sense that it's the same general setup. So it is a haunted roller coaster that you're on, and it has nods to the Dark Pictures games in characters and settings, but I wouldn't necessarily. I mean, well, obviously they say it's a dark. It's part of Dark Pictures because it's called the Dark Pictures Switchback VR, but it's it feels like more of a like you know like an accompaniment piece, like an accompanying game, spinoff game to Dark Pictures. The level of decisions are really mostly just like what pathway do you take, and sometimes your actions. So they do give you some stats at the end of. Parts of the ride, it's not separated super clearly. Like you get a score like during it. Let me also zoom out to explain what the moment-to-moment gameplay is. So you're recommended to sit because your character is sitting in this like roller coaster. There's stuff happening too. Like you're on this train and then it's like, oh, my father loved this coaster or something.
It's always
I don't
know. Your father.
Honestly, it's a little blurry for me because since I streamed it and I had to read the subtitles and subtitles in VR are kind of awkward because they're like superimposed and they're like at the bottom of the screen. So they were kind of like... I'm not the best in totally recollecting the story from my hour and a half that I played of it. So sorry if I'm butchering it. But then you're on this haunted roller coaster. And essentially the gameplay feels a lot like House of the Dead. You have dual wielding guns. You have a gun in each hand for the most part. And you're going through like this haunted passageway and you're shooting enemies, but you're also shooting like whatever's around, like little trinkets, you know, a coffee cup. They have stuff marked that's glowing that'll like act as a multiplier for
your
score.
Like
so
buffs, they did that in Until Dawn too.
Yeah, and they also have like kind of like Super Mario Sunshine, a way to switch out the type of gun by shooting a box, which is a weird comparison to make, but if you know, you know. So it's like, oh, now my gun's like an automatic instead of just like a little pistol. Overall, it is exactly what they sell it as, you know, haunted arcade style shmup, basically. Where my biggest criticisms of this game are the fact that visually it leaves something to be desired. This definitely is not a Horizon Call of the Mountain. It doesn't look super impressive. Like, I would not sit someone down and be like, look at the fidelity PSVR 2 could provide, because it don't look that hot. And my other criticism is there are sections that are kind of boss-esque, and those are just kind of, they're kind of bullet spongy, and I find that kind of boring. I think my favorite moments in this are when they are actually like moving the track up and down, which they don't do a lot, probably so you don't throw up, but literally like you have a little drop and, you know, you put your hands up and that's kind of fun. You feel it a little bit. So I like that. And generally the gunplay in the setting is fun. Like if you're a Dark Pictures fan, like you know, Light Spoils, you go through like the town of Little Hope and then you're in the burning house. Like it has like fun fan nods like that. Chad asks, is a curator in it? Of course he's there. My boy, the curator.
Oh, yeah! I gotta play it.
I fucking stand the curator.
If he's
hell
in
yeah.
it, I'm in it.
Yeah, exactly. That, no, same. Because, like, this is all in. So,
does his music play?
Is it what?
Does his music play? Like, does he walk in and he has his background music?
Honestly, I don't fully remember. We haven't gone one-on-one yet. He just kind of, like, has, like, he stood around and been all like, ooh, I'm the curator. You know how he is. He's a classic curator. Anyway,
classic curator.
big fan. But, so, that's the experience. I mean, I think if you have, you know, I streamed it, so chat was talking to me about it, and they were saying, oh, it's kind of like, it's a lot for what it is with the price point. And yeah, I think it's like $40 or something. One of y'all can look that up because I don't remember. Obviously, you can debate that. I'm not telling you how to spend your money. I think the game's all right. It's solid. I will say, though, obviously, if you're someone that has PSVR 2, you probably are just like, fuck it, I'm in, I'm here, and I'm trying to rock with some games. I think if you generally see the premise of this, it's an enjoyable experience. But I don't think it's like a must play on PSVR 2 necessarily. But that's been my experience so far. It is a bit longer than I expected too. I think the general playtime is couched as like 6 to 8 hours or something, which seems like a lot to me for what it is. Like I kind of would have liked it to maybe just be shorter just because it's a lot of time to be in VR. Again, might be lightly butchering that hours, but I do remember being longer than like, it's definitely longer than like 2. Cause I was like, oh, maybe we can beat it. And then people were like, oh no, it's like 4 to 8 or something. It's like, it's kind of up there, and there is replayability in the sense that there's different decisions and pathways you can take, but you know, it is basically just like a funky fun House of Dead Coaster Ride vibe in the Dark Picture setting. So there you go.
Yeah, for me, this one on PlayStation, obviously Chia was the main thrust of it, and right before Chia did, I downloaded both Switchback and Walking Dead Saints and Sinners Chapter 2, jumped into Chapter 2 of Walking Dead Saints and Sinners. It lives up to that preview I had where I was like, oh shit, this looks like, you know, it's actually kind of cool. And it was cool, you know, to walk around and stab the walkers in the head and do the thing. But it's back to, and Switchback looks like, as you say, Janet, it is what it looks like. And to me, it's back to what my whole comparison of this being a Dave and Buster's, where it was like that I enjoyed Until Dawn Rush of Blood for what it was, but that was like one, maybe two sessions where I was like, cool, and put it down and never really did it again. It was one of those many show pieces. We did a Let's Play here, kind of funny, where I put my mom in it and let her get, you know, ride. She rode around shooting stuff. So I didn't even get to it on Friday because I played more Walking Dead before I jumped to Chia, before I jumped back to wrestling. And yeah, Walking Dead was similar of like, cool, it is this, but as I described it, I think to you earlier, but yeah, to you and Tim, we were talking about it, right? It's just like, I just don't want to sit there for however many hours doing up my back and the side, looking over, grab this thing, do that thing, grab that thing. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that that's a desire for a lot of people, I think, in video games. And so it's like, cool, this is a giant open world to an extent, or I should say open world, giant RPG they want you to go play or whatever. But it is like, I don't know, do I really want to walk around and do this? What I probably prefer to do it in third person. So it's quality from what I played of it, but I'm not like anxious to get back to it. And then what I really played all week was wrestling. So. Still obsessed with WWE 2K23. Send in blessing the Steve Austin code for 316. Yeah. When I saw that, sign on to my faction.
Redeem that.
I still sign on to my faction every day to get my daily rewards.
Hell yeah.
Even if I don't have time for the match and stuff. Like, I'm still very obsessed with WWE 2K23.
Hell yeah. I want to play it more consistently. Like, it's been that weird thing where the more I play it, the more I'm like, okay, yeah, this is more 2K22.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not getting the freshness of it. But
see, it's for me, it's like playing it. Yeah, there's that feel to it, but then it's the dialing in of the little things they've changed.
Yeah.
Do this. And, like, you know, my TikTok algorithm has learned that I like it, so I'm getting so many clips of cool shit people are doing. I'm like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. Oh, I should do that. Oh, that was a really great RKO out of nowhere, blah, blah, blah. Like,
I kind of want to try my Rise is the one where you create a character.
Yeah, I still got to finish Roger's story.
Yeah.
The lock.
I did a stream where I started playing my Rise, and, like, For the first whole hour of the stream, it was just me creating my character.
Yeah.
And I like finish it, and I'm like, I think the stream's done here. Like I'm like, I've played for an hour. Like, I don't know how much more I have in me right now.
100%.
But yeah, no, I'm like, I love starting my rise and it already giving you the gimmick of like the lock thing.
Yeah.
I assume that was like the Roger, like,
yep, that's gimmick. What Roger's doing. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, oh shit. All right, cool. Like, I get to be the lock for a second and figure out what this thing is. But yeah. Yeah.
We do have an update to the breaking news, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh shit.
Tony Todd has tweeted, "No more hints about Spider-Man 2. It was all a fever dream. Blame it on jet lag. Who knows? I might not even be Venom." God bless you, Tony. Man.
What is this?
That's
picture?
So funny.
It's him in a hot tub, it looks like, maybe. You know what I mean? It looks like he's got some kind of weird, like, you know, those lenses on that totally make your eyes completely
black. I think
black.
It's a pool in his presumably house.
But look at his eyes. You know?
There's some Venom eyes. You know?
That's the eyes of someone who just broke an NDA by accident.
He hasn't deleted those tweets yet, but again, I'm sure you'll know more on Friday.
Yeah, we won't. Jim Rhines is at his door, like, open up! Open up!
Ted Price, like, what the fuck is going on, Venom? Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of PS I Love You XOXO. Remember, we're your PlayStation podcast that posts every Friday. Of course, you can watch us record the show live on patreon.com/kindoffunny. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunny, you can watch us record all the other shows ad-free. You can get each and every show ad-free on demand. You can get dozens and dozens of bonus exclusive episodes of content only on patreon.com/kindoffunny. However, if you have no books tossed away, no big deal. You, of course, can get the show with ads. Not early. YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames. Podcast services around the globe. If you want to support us in an easy way that's free, use the Epic creator code kindoffunny when you're checking out of the Epic Game Store or when you're playing Fortnite or whatever on your PlayStation. It can pop in an Epic creator code like kindoffunny. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.